Welcome to Polycast, an official podcast of a Poulton Civilization site. Daniel Quick.
Makalua.
Imran Siddiqui.
Cardamandua.
Final Countdown.
The only other song I know that has Countdown in the title is the theme to Care Bears, and I'm not singing that.
Sing it!
Just because you said so, Imran? No.
No.
Welcome to Polycast, an official podcast of a Poulton Civilization site. This is episode 44, so whichever order you do the number, it's still 44. I'm joined by Mackie.
Hello.
And Lee.
Hey.
Who goes by Cartamandua, and Mackie is, of course, short form for Makalua still. Imran Siddiqui.
Hello.
Which is short form for, well, we don't really care. And I'm Dan Q, short for Daniel Quick. Do you rename your CivMid game? I've never actually done that.
Nope.
What's the freaking point?
Flying Chicken thinks it's fun.
Bring back the Civ 2 renaming city system. Yeah, I'm for that.
Eh, I don't rename cities either.
Do sometimes.
I rename nothing. What is, it is.
I do name my cities different names than the city list suggests. My last game I was playing as a Holy Roman Empire, and my cities were like Holy Cow and Holy Mackerel.
Holy Toledo.
Yeah, I stopped playing halfway, but my next city was going to be Holy Socks, but I didn't get that far.
No. Yeah, I don't rename that either. I just keep the name they give me.
We noticed, for example, if you go to settle a city and it's given you a suggested name and you choose not to take it, but give it something else, then the next time you go to found a city, then it suggests that same name you said.
Right, and I agree that you should be able to skip over the one you already skipped over and now go to the next one on your list. I think that would be a good idea.
In the news, we talked about Infogrames buying the rest of Atari that they didn't already have, and Imran had a little side discussion about how much Securom sucks, or maybe it doesn't.
In the research lab, we discussed scrapping the FATX design theory. Pudgy Jesus. Oh yeah.
Oh no.
In the Senate, we discussed, is war too important, or can you hide in a corner and not deal with the world?
Maybe our real Senate should talk about that.
There you go.
In forum talk, we discussed removing global warming from the game and dams and hydropower and such, and the effects or non-effects of them in our game. Suck it up! Oh, sorry.
Go ahead, Dan.
I don't know how I can possibly follow that performance, but...
If you were concerned about following another performance, you wouldn't be doing this show.
It's a good thing I have a good sense of humor. So. And also strategic loopholes, arrogance, and the good stuff. Lastly, a Vault Duo. Big Huge Games being bought by THQ, becoming one of its in-house developers. And the so-called best things I learned about the science of warfare from Civilization IV to create a top 10 list. Here's what's been making news in the Civ community. We received an email from Tim S., who goes by Steiner Davian over at CFC and Appleton, saying that he listens to the show. In fact, says, great show. I was just listening to my other favorite podcast, which is DDO Cast, which is a podcast on Dungeons & Dragons, and they mentioned that Infogrames is buying out the rest of the interest in Atari. I was then looking forward to hearing your take on this news, but surprised to hear that it wasn't mentioned on this week's show, and I told him that we recorded episode 43 on April 26th, but this news didn't break until May 1st. So we were going to talk about it on this episode. Up until this point, as of recently, Infogrames has owned just over 50% of Atari, but now it is going to buy the rest of Atari, and it's supposed to close by third quarter, assuming it all goes through. Infogrames will pay $11 million or $1.68 a share for the remaining ones. Atari has been delisted on NASDAQ as a sign towards this.
Ooh.
No more Atari.
Apparently Atari will be a wholly owned subsidiary of Infogrames. Whether or not they will continue to use the Atari name?
Probably.
I think that would be a good idea for Infogrames, considering what their name is.
Yeah, who wants to be known as Infogrames? Maybe they should just take the name of the whole place. Wait, didn't they do that before?
It's vaguely familiar somehow.
And I guess in the article, one of the trends is buying out consolidation-wise. Of course, they also mention EA trying to buy Take-Two. You know, now Infogrames is buying up the rest of Atari. Pretty soon, we're just going to have Infogrames and EA. One of them will buy Activision. Isn't Blizzard already...
Blizzard and Universal?
Yeah,
that's it. In 2007, Infogrames fired the majority of Atari's directors and laid off 20% of its workforce. And from 06 to 07 fiscal year, Atari posted a net loss of $70 million.
Well, it's not like it was a $100 million loss, so I don't see what the problem is.
They lost less than triple digits. Nah.
Infogrames has committed to lend Atari $20 million to fund Atari's operational cash requirement between the period between the merger agreement and its closing. Whoa. That's pretty nice.
That's pretty nice. Here you go.
I guess we really don't have any strong opinions either way, unlike the discussion of, say, Electronic Arts and Take-Two.
I guess when they had Civ, it was something to talk about, but... And I guess on their wiki page, they say products. And like, Alone in the Dark, Unreal Tournament 2003, North and South, Roller Coaster Tycoon, Civ 3, Test Drive.
In recent years, Infogrames has been using the Atari name as a brand name, but the company name is still...
Atari did Neverwinter Nights. This is a decently successful series there. It just seems to me like both Infogrames and Atari aren't necessarily on any cutting edge of anything right now.
Oh, you mentioned those job cuts from before?
Uh-huh.
Following Atari's removal from NASDAQ, Atari stock will be available for purchase and sale through delisted company trader Pink Sheets.
Uh-oh.
Oh.
I was hoping you were going to say, available for sale in the back of this guy's truck.
I suppose if Atari is losing that kind of money, then maybe it's just as well.
Perhaps so. Yeah, they're not really doing anything.
Mackie, did you want to talk about the online validation?
Well, I know it's not a Civ topic, but...
How both Spore and Mass Effect are going to require every 10 days for you to revalidate your game online after initial validation. Very nice.
Yeah, there's a reason I didn't buy Bioshock, and that might be it. I do not like this copy protection scheme at all. I would almost rather go back to having to answer words out of the manual.
I remember the original SimCity, and you had a code sheet, and you had to type in an alphanumeric code.
Oh, yeah, and it was in red, so you couldn't photocopy it.
Yes.
Oh, those crazy copy protection schemes.
I know they want to protect themselves. I know that they think they're losing more money than they probably actually are with piracy, but this is inconveniencing your normal consumers far more than it's inconveniencing the pirates, because even when they put this copy protection on, it's cracked in a matter of days or weeks. It's overkill.
Maybe this is one of the starts where they can say, listen, we even tried this thing or every 10 days and they're still pirating, so maybe we should just stop making the game for the PC. I mean, maybe this is a way to focus more on consoles. I mean, it seems like that one of the reasons gaming is going more on consoles is it seems like it's a little bit harder to pirate for the console. And it's not impossible, but it seems to be far more of a problem on PCs. It almost seems like it's the final straw type of thing. Like, oh, well, if this doesn't work, well, maybe we should just make console-exclusive titles.
Yeah, but Starduck still sells stuff very well, and they don't have copy protection. It's not hurting them that much. I mean, the negative feedback they're getting from the consumers and the PR is hurting these other companies more than the actual piracy probably is. What about the people who are playing on the PC and don't get on the internet that often? Because there are people like that. That's not fair to them. Your game is suddenly going to lock up, and I think you only have a certain number of lockouts before you have to go through customer service hell to get the game unlocked, which is ridiculous.
Oh, did you read the thread recently, by the way? The thread in the other games forum on this?
Yes, I've seen threads in almost every gaming site I've gone to.
They said validation is now only going to be required when the player downloads new game content.
So every time they give us a bug fix, it has to revalidate?
I guess so.
When you reinstall the game to play it out of nostalgia and their server isn't there to validate, what happens then?
I actually don't mind online validation when you install or download new game content. I see doing that because, you know, you figure you'd be going online to download the stuff anyway.
Yeah, when you install, like, a major expansion pack or something like that, but not for every little bug fix, why does it need to do that? It's a complicated subject.
I mean, obviously the industry is very concerned about piracy, and stuff like this isn't going to necessarily go away. It'll probably get more onerous, and it seems like more of a move has been made to consoles because they're scared of piracy.
Yeah, I've seen, who was it the other day, Crytek, who was saying, I think they were blaming piracy for the reason they wanted to move to console. I think they just wanted to move to console and it's a scapegoat. It's very convenient to say, oh, piracy costs us too much, we can't do for the PC.
Well, I think at some point, this is a valid factor, saying, listen, there's a lot of piracy on the PC, we're not sure if we're going to make the money necessary to do a port over, or, you know, to make back that money in sufficient amounts to justify it. So, already console gaming is bigger for, I guess, new titles or whatever, for making money. Might as well just stick with that and not worry about doing a port to the PC.
Well, that's just a sorry situation for the industry to be getting into. If it comes down to about the only thing left on PC is the MMOs, because it's kind of hard to pirate those.
Some of the games we're talking about, BioShock, I guess, came out for Xbox and PC at the same time. But Mass Effect came out for the Xbox 360, what was it, 6 months ago, maybe? Even more than that? It seems like they're going more to that sort of thing, where it's console exclusive first, like, you know, Grand Theft Auto 4. Who knows when it's coming out for the PC, maybe 6 months, maybe a year from now. It almost seems like the PC version is an afterthought anyway.
Oh, so why put such stringent copy protection on something that is an afterthought? And six months from now, all the people who absolutely had to play it right then are going to be done playing it. So it's nothing, nobody will pirate it in 6 months, but it wouldn't be quite as bad.
True, but I think they want to do whatever they can to make as much money as they possibly can on it. They think it's a little bit more onerous. Maybe they can delay it for a little bit or make it a little bit harder. You know, with the game content thing, one of the things is if they release something kind of small but cool every couple weeks or so and have you validate, that could really make a little bit of a difference in terms of how many people actually pirate it.
Yeah, if you had something like Oblivion where they were putting out something like that on RPG or something, I could see where it wouldn't be so bad to have that validation check all the time, but it's the problems later down the road too, I guess. Like, okay, maybe not everybody plays games again like 5 years later, but still.
Well, didn't you realize that when you play Civ 4, that Sid Meier looks at you every single time?
I have the solution for you, BioWare. Just make your games crap and then no one will want to pirate it. Next time. Got news? Email news@apolton.net or send a private message to Dan Q, Locutus, or one of the other news editors.
Come on into the research lab where we explore concepts that are not in Civ yet, but maybe in the future.
Scrapping the FATX Ohm 66 on CFC. Basically, we all know what the FATX is. It's the, you know, the little city border thing, whatever.
City radius.
Yeah, yeah. He wants to think about what other changes could be made to this, you know, whether to change the FATX of 21 squares to a simple square of 3x3 or 9 total squares. By reducing the area of cities, he figures you can pack them in more tightly together, and wondering if this would be something better.
Well, as Mr. Cynical points out, this is just going to increase micromanagement because you're going to have more cities to look after, almost certainly. And it will almost certainly bring about a boring grid of cities, minimizing thought about city placement, which can happen now, but I think it would be, as he says, be even more problematic than before. 66 wants this because he wants to play with more than the maximum number of civs that you can on even a larger map, and doesn't feel that, well, we have to increase the map size to do that. We can just reduce the fat cross. I'm not liking this idea. As Mr. Cynical said, I think we were just going to get more micromanagement. More cities does not mean better. And indeed, later on in the thread, he talks about his ideal situation, having a city on every tile.
Oh.
Hey.
That just brings back Infinite City Sprawl, and we worked so hard to get rid of it.
How are you going to support all that?
And who wants to look at an ugly map full of city squares? Ugh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There'll be no sheep jumping around.
Oh. Can we call it something else other than the fat cross? This just provides images of a pudgy Jesus. Like, call it like the X square or something. I don't know. The X radius. There you go. Yeah, you'd basically have a ridiculous situation. All the fixes that have been done in Civ 4 to combat Infinite City Sprawl, how are you possibly going to take advantage of this to the fullest without totally bankrupting yourself? Unless you cheat. I don't know. And yes, it looks incredibly ugly.
Yeah, we don't need a city on every single tile to represent that there's population there. If farms are being worked, or there is a cottage there, and then it grows into a hamlet and a town, there are people working there, and that's taken into account in the size of the city, directly or indirectly.
Yeah.
What I do like about what Om66 is saying is that he's recognizing that such a change does not happen in isolation in game design, so he's thinking about, okay, if we do that, then what else is going to have to change? Saying that simply adding more buildings that boosted basic tile output rather than doubling tile output from the start would be the best way to make this work, because, of course, if you don't have as many squares that a city can work, then the production isn't going to be as high unless you change some other things here. And also, additionally, with cities being crammed closer together, you'd probably have to slow cultural border expansion some to compensate.
Mm-hmm.
He is working towards having it so that in Civ, you can have a similar number of states as the real world has today. So he's talking about around 200 on average.
Oh, dear.
How are you going to manage relations with that? How is that going to be meaningful?
But as he said, this is just entirely theoretical. I mean, he's not suggesting the Fraxis even try to do this.
I recognize that, and he even says that maybe this was the wrong form to put it in as a result, but if it's just going to be in theory, he doesn't necessarily want to see it towards any practical application, then why are we talking about it in relation to Civ? Starts a theory now, but certainly we want to have it have some sort of practical implementation.
Well, yeah, I think in the end it could result in some practical implementation, like why do we need the X city square radius? Why is that the proper shape that it should undertake? In the end, that's kind of the underlying question.
I realize it's not realistic. We realize that, but then it's a game. I'm not saying that we should never entertain the possibility of changing it, but what we're suggesting here just seems to be a bit much. Although, I think a good testing ground is going to be Civilization Revolution in this respect, because the Fat Cross is in fact dare to be changed. It's not going to necessarily be so cross-shaped, and instead of 20 tiles, there are going to be 8, not including the city tile itself. So it will be interesting to see how that works out, and perhaps that's something to look at for Civ 5.
Maybe that's where Om66 got the idea to scrap the X-Cross idea. He read about Civ Rev. He read Dan's preview of Civ Rev.
Yes, yeah, speaking of which, you can find my discussion of this in Part 4, There Be Units. What, was this all a promotion for my Civ Rev preview? No.
Shameless plug.
Yeah, of course it's not. Dan feels shame every time he doesn't.
Dan has shame?
Welcome to the Senate, where we discuss game strategy. The question is war too important? Ibian says he thinks war is too important in the game. Can't really have a very peaceful game. He says the only thing that the game steers you to, really, is to build up an army and go to war with everyone else, which is what most people seem to do. He says in Gal Civ, he's able to work diplomacy in a way that he was left alone, even with very many aggressive neighbors, and he thinks that Civ does not allow the same type of flexibility and just steers you toward military expansion.
Well, in Civ 4, particularly with aggressive or otherwise hateful neighbors, if you endeavor to share their religion, be it they're adopting yours or you adopting theirs, then by the time the Free Religion Civic becomes available, or maybe it's even forced upon you by the UN, you should be in good stead with the number of civs, all the while keeping your military at least comparable to theirs in terms of number and modernness. as Jazmail succinctly puts it, if you want peace, then prepare for war.
Mm.
If you ally well and you pick your battles carefully, you could also survive with a small army. For instance, if you're exploring and once you can, trading or at least buying world maps at regular intervals, and if you happen to have your espionage slider at 10%, once you make first contact the first time, you can probably also glean through demographics where you are on the power scale relative to everyone else. So if someone comes to you who's particularly powerful and says, we want you to go to war with so-and-so, or at least perhaps we want you to cancel your deals with so-and-so, if so-and-so isn't particularly powerful, and they happen to also be far away, or even if not particularly far away, then there's going to be minimal negative effect to you in terms of, well, so-and-so no longer likes you, but what are they going to do about it? And you're going to be in the good graces of someone who's just as, if not more powerful than you are. So I really don't think that war is too important, but it is important to be prepared for. You can do that with some reasonable considerations. You do not need to be stockpiling. You don't need to be a warmonger, but especially if you're making a pretty tasty cultural sieve, you want to be able to defend that.
I'd have to completely agree with you, Dan. I think that it's true. You have to make yourself at least look like you have some ability to defend yourself, just so that you don't look so easy to be picked upon. And I think you can have a peaceful game, because I've done it.
And people who are much better at diplomacy have managed to pull off. I've seen this in a couple of threads where they had no military at all, still managed to get through to a win condition on the game. So it's not impossible. It's just you have to be really, 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 really good at diplomacy, which not all of us are.
Kawa Limus believes that the great general system tips the scale way too far in favor of warmongering. He says, quote, that means if you're at war early on, you're going to get ridiculously heavy promoted units later in the game, giving you or whatever AI a huge advantage, unquote. Well, everything is relative. If you're in war early on, and assuming you're winning and still around to actually use those heavily promoted units, I don't think that's going to give you a great advantage. I think that's well balanced, and I don't see how the Great General system really changed that too much. Great Generals themselves will only appear short of, isn't there a wonder or something that gives you a free great general? Requires more combat experience than the one before that to be generated. Ibian, in Alpha Centauri, he says, you were at least able to use spies to buy opposing armies, but even this option is not presented here. To me, as long as there are some reasonable checks and balances on spies buying opposing armies, for example, I hoard gold, so I can buy all the armies I want from someone else. I wouldn't want to see that. For those familiar with Alpha Centauri, how the heck did that work?
It was a probe action. You with the probe team is the equivalent of spies. You'd come up right alongside them, and if there was two units stacked together, you couldn't get them. But if it was one unit by itself, you could. It's very similar to how you did with diplomats, I believe, in Civ 2 and 1.
Mm.
Ah, I also like that where it's just, you can't go up to a stack of death.
Yeah, no, you can't, sadly.
Calling all modders. Ibian also says that he wants to see meaningful culture flipping of cities. How is culture flipping of cities in Civ 4 not meaningful? I'd like to see him elaborate on that unless someone has an idea of what he might be getting at. Thought so.
Yeah, we're clueless.
But, you know, I think we do have a solution for Ibian, short of a future iteration of Civ or modding one character of code. And that's in your game setup. Choose always peace.
There is a good way for competitive play and to have other people give you advice. That's the Apollyon University.
And we would find that where? Jeez.
Apollyon.net/forums.
Really? Wow. How could I figure that out from Apollyon University?
I don't know.
Sometimes I wonder. This is Forum Talk, where we investigate hot Civ issues in the forums. Removing global warring. He who ate pie.
Pie.
Gotta love the names.
He who ate pie wants the global warring mechanic removed and asks if that can be done through changing some code. And Zephyr actually provides that. But the conversation, of course, goes to more generally, which is, should we have global warming in the first place? And if we do, do we like how the mechanic is currently implemented? I don't know if anyone else noticed, but there was a bit of off-topic castness going on in here, because apparently Firaxis has a left-wing environmental agenda that's being pushed down our throats. I didn't realize this.
It's like Al Gore and the internet.
Somehow I think even the Republicans would agree that if the AI starts throwing around nukes, you're going to get some global warming.
No, it's a myth. It's a myth.
Unless it's in the water, of course, in which case, well, there's no personal
problem. Oh, that's rough.
Well, I think there should be global warming in the game because, hello, it's real. We don't have everything that's real in the game, but it's a nice little, how should I say, kind of a counterweight to rapid industrialization. It's something major that you'll have to deal with.
Yeah, it's a good consequence if you're throwing around nukes everywhere. Honestly, suck it up.
Got your big girl panties?
That's right.
I love Wallyard's comment. It's misrepresented in the game because nuclear winter, it's not necessarily global warming, it's global climate change. But I guess it's easier to model it as more of a warming than it is for random climate weirdness.
Yeah, I might have to do something like make a check for, well, is this pollution from a nuke or is this normal pollution? And if you throw around enough nukes, could you count your global warming?
All right. I'm doing this to save the planet. Well, there's also, you know, parts of the world will become cooled by global warming based on Gulf Stream shutting down, things like that. So
exactly.
Yeah, I mean, maybe the solution should be just random, weird weather effects instead of just warming, but I guess they decide to abstract it by just making it warming.
I would like to see it a bit more balanced in that, yes, there's a possibility that it could become a desert, but also depending upon where in the world, however you want to decide that, there's like an equal opportunity for forest growth, because as you're saying, you got the shifting weather patterns, which is what Braids was getting at.
Or random tundra squares as another cooling place.
Right. Or just to freak people out, random ice. Whoa.
Woohoo.
Yeah, I like that. Suddenly there's ice at the equator. What?
Right in the middle of my city square. Oh, no.
Yeah, that'd be much more effective.
I have tundra in my fat cross. Tie-in.
Yeah. Nice.
And I think that when it comes to global warming, there are a number of buildings that can also help.
One of the reasons people have concerns about it is there's no counter for global warming. And therefore, that's why people are somewhat frustrated about it. Samus AU on the second page says, don't mind the idea behind it, but until you can do something to balance its effects, such as a treaty with other leaders on pollution, build some structures to slow, remove its effects, terraform the land back to what it should be, he doesn't think it should be in the game. I don't go that far, but maybe there should be some things to balance it out, like a Kyoto-ish treaty or that you can propose in the UN or something like that.
Because the player can be running leanest, greenest civilization that they can and still end up with global warming because everybody else is polluting the crap out of everything.
Mm-hmm.
The Samus, oh, actually, he also proposes a random event for if one of your nuclear power plants has melted down. It's actually kind of creative. Not that I necessarily agree with it. Shut down all plants and perform safety checks or do what we can to help our citizens send medical and technical aid. And the end is nigh. Stockpile beans and head for the hills. Well, listen, I thought we were trying to reduce global warming. People are eating beans. Well, that's, you know.
Hey, methane gas. The best is by this guy, Scrib Jelly Donut, who basically disagrees about global warming. He goes, I just spent a semester in a college English research class that focused on the environment. Global warming hasn't been proven, isn't time-tested, and surely isn't historical, but instead a projected future effect. A theory, no less. Well, I'm sorry, you're Mr. College English Research Class that focused on the environment guy. You must be right.
Also on CFC, Howard! Exclamation point. So it's not just Howard. I have to say Howard! Exclamation point. Otherwise, I could be...
You have to yell it, actually.
Wait, hold on. Howard!
That's right.
Says hydropower plants don't have any of the negative ramifications. When you build a dam, all floodplains downstream should vanish, and if a river system is dammed too many times, it should turn grassland to plains and plains to desert. Whoa!
Well, Howard, would you like to code that for us? There might be a reason they didn't put that in.
Later on in the post, you know, Howard says that global warming in the game is ridiculous and should be removed. Well, what you're talking about here, Howard, is...
global warming on a small scale.
I agree with Mackie. Perhaps the coating may prevent such intricate details.
But even if it could, would you want it?
Well, maybe they should have some negative ramifications, but maybe not that much negative ramifications. Plains to desert is ridiculous.
And the floodplain's vanishing. Nobody would ever build a dam or a hydro if that was going to be the case, because nobody would want to lose their floodplains. They're far too valuable.
Mm.
It basically make the damn thing not worth having in the game.
Yeah.
Totally unintentional.
This thread leads to some suggest that we need additional power generating options beyond coal and hydro and nuclear. Fusion power.
Biofuel.
Geothermal.
What did I say before? Suck it up and move on? Yeah. If he wants to code it, that's fine. Otherwise.
In a subsequent post by Howard, he says, so my list of power plants for whoever would be coal plant plus 2 on healthiness, possible upgrade when clean burning to only plus 1. Oh, maybe. Hydro, plus 1 unhappiness per dam upstream in each city. No floodplains downstream, but no unhappiness from power. I wouldn't want to see my floodplains disappear either.
No.
But if that's a choice you wanted to make, well, okay. Nuclear, no unhappiness or unhealthiness, but risk of meltdown.
That's no change, basically.
Yeah, although I would think the risk of meltdown might make you unhappy.
Some unhappy faces?
That's okay. Fusion, no unhappiness or unhealthiness, but high build costs and high tech. I guess high tech meaning that it would be a very later game availability. Yes and no. Later game, obviously, but when you just say high build cost, then after the high build cost, there really isn't any negative that's ongoing after that. I'm not sure about that. Because everything else has that once it's built, there is some kind of negative and some kind of balance. But anyway, and then Three Gorges Dam plus 3 unhappiness downstream, whew, and no floodplains downstream.
That would be an anti-wonder.
Would I build a wonder that makes unhappiness?
Yeah.
No.
I hate my people. I'm going to build the Three Gorges Dam.
I hate floodplains. I'm going to build the Three Gorges Dam.
Well, that would be an interesting mod, though. Evil dictator. See how quickly you can destroy your civilization.
You have a higher score the more unhappy people you have?
I think it's important to point out that this is the first forum topic not from a Poulton or CFC that we have ever talked about in the history of Polycast.
It's from the 2K forums.
To which I looked at this and went, 2K has forums?
Yeah, me too.
So this forum thread starts by Mr. Game Theory to say that he is a little annoyed at CivRev possibilities and has some strong opinions, might be a bit of an understatement. So the reason I selected this thread was not to profile him, but rather to praise Jason Bergman, who's the producer on CivRev, who has answered a number of questions in an extremely timely fashion about the game. This is said several times over in this thread, which, from what I can tell, gives us the most new information about CivRev since my in-house CivRev preview over to Poulton.net/forums. Read all parts. It's great.
Oh, not again.
I think Dan's right that Jason2K shows up and answers all the questions that Mr. Game Theory can possibly think of.
All of Jason's responses in this thread, I went through and tried to pick out some new and interesting information about the game. The Mongolian bonus will be that the barbarian villages will become Mongolian cities after being defeated. The closest thing we have to a late game start are the scenarios. You can't start a normal game in a later area. Oh, there is only one nuke in the game.
Ooh.
And it's given by building the Manhattan Project Wonder.
Ooh.
Oh. So that's different.
There is no collateral damage to be in CivRev.
Not going to make it hard to catapult down a stack.
I think now with the outrageous, extreme, awesome, crazy, some of these words actually having been used by 2K themselves, bonuses, I think that will be offset. You will always play with random personalities. Each civilization's leader's traits are random, I think my favorite quote from Jason is, AI is dumb to a certain extent because that makes the game fun. Not to take that out of context, but it's not going to keep throwing units at you, particularly not on the higher difficulty levels. It'll do things like use siege units, naval support, etc. No roads outside of your culture. Roads just go from city to city and cannot go through another user's culture, even if you're at war with them. They don't disappear if you lose a city or anything, but you can't build new ones that go through enemy territory. Settlers can be used to shift population from one city to another, so if you have a size 20 city and a size 1 city, you can create settlers to join them to the size 1 city to beef it up quickly. You can't do that in Civ 4, can you? I never actually tried, but you used to be able to do that in previous versions of Civ.
You could, but I don't think you can in 4 anymore. This is a Vault segment with topics cut from earlier episodes, but have found relevance again later.
From episode 36 with Dan Q, Makalua, Imran Siddiqui, and Ra, recorded on January 19th, 2008. THQ is to buy Big Huge Games. Yes, Big Huge Games, the developer of Rise of Nations and Rise of Nations Rise of Legends, is being bought by THQ, which is a game publisher and developer, for an undisclosed amount of money. BHG founded in 2000 by Ryan Reynolds, Jason Coleman, David Inscore, and Tim Train, who worked on Alpha Centauri, which we all love, and Civilization II, which we also love. This isn't the first time, though, that there has been a connection between THQ and Big Huge Games. Last February, it was announced that Ken Rolston, the lead designer behind The Elder Scrolls IV Oblivion, had come out of retirement to join the company as lead designer on an untitled role-playing game. And it was later that May that it was announced that THQ would publish this title in 2009, making it the first title that Big Huge Games would make that wouldn't be distributed by Microsoft. And so now something tells me that games after this 2009 title will also not be published by Microsoft. I don't know why.
Was the buyout a clue?
There's an article on Gamma Sutra about this, actually, as well. And
sorry.
This is a family-friendly show. And they asked the vice president of Worldwide Studios at THQ, Jack Sorensen, about why bring Big Huge in-house, you know, when they were already working with them. And he stated that getting to know of the Big Huge team played a role in motivating the acquisition, as opposed to continuing a purely developer-publisher relationship. Big Huge will be one of more than 12 studios, part of the THQ family, some of those which THQ started and has always been in-house, but others which have been purchased in the past. And apparently, the final reason, what really motivated the acquisition, was that Big Huge is working on another title that they won't talk about at all, that's apparently new original intellectual property that's that big, and it sealed the acquisition deal. Anyone wants to know, THQ was founded in 1989, and they're a publicly traded company with more than 1,600 employees. They had revenue of just over $32 million on revenue of $806 million in 2006. And BHG has 100 employees, and all employees are being retained, and apparently there's going to be no changes in management. THQ, we're still waiting for that sequel to Rise of Nations. So why don't you get right on that? That must be the new game they're talking about. We all know that.
No. Besides, they have to wait until they're done with the RPG, because I want to see this.
It can wait.
No. So
from episode 43 with Dan Q, Makalua, Imran Siddiqui, Cardamandua, and Grand Patrol, recorded on April 26th, 2008. Things I learned about the science of warfare through Civilization 4. Mackie must have forgotten what I'd said about this topic episode, otherwise she might not have brought it up earlier, because I have a top 10.
Oh, no. What have I done?
So, top 10 things I learned about the science of warfare through Civ 4. Number 10, from Talnet. The whole world will be bored of conflict in 2050 and will declare a world ruler based on its population and land area. China will take over the world. Number 9, from ICNP. Animals are afraid of art, music, and books. If there's any of these in an area, they will scatter forthwith. However, savage barbarians are attracted to said art and will attempt to destroy it.
True.
It's true. Number 8, never bring a tank to a spear fight from EMS.
Oh, that should be number 1.
That's a good one.
From Justinian the 8th, a destroyer is capable of shooting down a metal plane that has jet engines, but not a big, slow, floating bag of gas. Number 6, from Invisible Stock, a society with no bronze can still discover how to work it and can make axes for tree chopping, but the same axes can't be used in battle.
Top 10 things that annoy us list, what?
From Everest, if a bomber attacks a city, he only hits military units, neither civilians nor buildings will have a single scratch. This is because all military units have to stand right in the middle of a city so the bombers can easily find them. Is this true?
I thought they just had advanced, what's it called, smart bombs.
This is a similar one to head on, I think, on a top 10 list before, but from JerVL/KG, it only costs a few hundred dollars to make an elephant become a helicopter. That is impressive.
It's a bionic helicopter or something.
Also from the same person, number 3, oil is only required to build planes and tanks, not use them. If you lose access to oil, production will immediately grind to a halt. But existing planes and tanks will keep working indefinitely because they are solar powered.
I like this.
From Sim 1, a Stone Age warrior with a wooden club can single-handedly wipe a modern megalopolis and all of its inhabitants off the face of the world. Comparatively, a nuclear bomb can only kill off half of its inhabitants, and the city itself will still remain. And my number 1, plus a personal favorite of mine, which is probably why it's number 1. I don't know, there could be a correlation. From ICMP, units must be specifically trained in the art of walking on enemy rows because they are constructed differently.
They zig instead of zag.
I really like the one in the original post, number 9, that says, a couple of artists in a nearby city are far more able to conquer a neighboring city by riding a few plays than a large army of swordsmen in catapults. Colin, today.
In North America, the number is 301-637-7659. That's 301-637-POLLY.
In Europe, 441-212-88-7659. That's 441-212-88-POLLY.
You can Skype us at the Polycast or email us at polycast@apolton.net.
For more information on Polycast, our sibling show Modcast, or about Polycast in general,
log into the series' official website at polycast.apolton.net.
Well, this is a very environmentally themed podcast. It's Green Week.
It's because of our liberal left wing, right?
Agenda.
Yeah.
Well, it's hosted by Canadians, so we all know they're all lefties. But isn't Mackie from Texas?
What's that supposed to mean?
Balances out the Canadian-ness.
Hey. Just because I live in Texas does not mean I can't be left-leaning or liberal or anything.
We need to keep our conservative listeners.
What, all 2 of them?
Where do you think the money comes from for this?
Thank you for listening to Polycast, episode 44, an official production of Polyton Civilization site. Today on our show we had Dan Q.
Bye all, keep on civin.
Imran Siddiqui.
Bye.
Makalua.
Bye.
And myself, Cardin Mandua.
Oh, the person that sent us the mail up, he said that his favorite segment on the show is Senate because it makes him rethink his strategy.
Really?
Is he listening to the same show that we are? Because
well, his strategy might be really bad, and ours is just bad.
That's still a step up.
Oh, that's true. Bye.
All right, I'm bored of this topic now. But I agree with whoever it was.
It's insect jelly, don't it?
Ooh, insect jelly.
I preferred it when I was ignorant about what that was. So.
Thank you for listening to Polycast episode 44, an official Polycast of... No, it is an official Polycast.
Keep going.
In forum talk, we discussed removing global warming from the game, and what else did we talk about?
And the world. Record date?
May 10th, 2008.
Sound clips copyright Civilization 4 and the Warlords and Meon the Sword expansion packs. Copyright 2008 Appulton Civilization site at appulton.net.